877-466-3 and learn how your gift of property can make a meaningful difference.
Support for KPFK comes from a screening of the documentary Steal This Story on Friday, April 17, 2026, as a fundraiser for KPFK. The event takes place at the Lemley Royal in West Los Angeles with a screening at 1:10 p.m. and 7:10 p.m. Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman will be in attendance for a Q&A session alongside filmmakers Carl Diehl and Tia Lesson. Information and full event details are available at kpfk.org.
Welcome to Bibliocracy, KPFK's weekly literary arts show. I'm your host, Andrew Tonkovich, editor of the Santa Monica Review and founding editor of Citric Acid. I'm also a proud member of the Community of Writers, which features this show as a podcast. The Community of Writers hosts annual summer writers' workshops in the California Sierra and offers an impressive lineup of online short courses taught by talented writers of poetry and prose. See communityofwriters.org for more. The welcome, which begins today's episode of Bibliocracy Radio, makes even more sense if you heard my first show, dedicated to higher education union activism, and the recent publication by PM Press of a landmark book titled Out of the Lab, Into the Streets, a real cause for celebration and a case study in democratic union organizing. In addition to talking with writers of prose and poetry, memoir, and cultural criticism on Bibliocracy, I'm committed to celebrating nonfiction books like this one, which assembles oral histories chronicling a landmark victory for democratic trade union organizing. And it puts me in a good mood, and I hope gives all of us joy and courage. So here's the second show dedicated to all those who struggled and won a terrific victory, one which helps us all. I am pleased to welcome two guests this week in a second show dedicated to celebrating a landmark book and the union victory it documents. Out from PM Press, Out of the Lab, Into the Streets tells the story in carefully curated oral histories of how academic workers at the University of California won a historic contract for thousands, by which I mean, yes, exactly how they did that strategically, collectively, politically, in a struggle that offers lessons and insights. Aleida Garcias Aguirre is one of the three editors of this book, subtitled An Oral History of the 2022 UAW Strike at the University of California, and Emily Weintraut is one of nine subjects, United Auto Workers, worker organizers whose experience is documented. We'll hear more about Emily via her role in the strike, but Aleida Garcia Aguirre is an independent history researcher specializing in studying subjectivation of young revolutionaries in Mexico and Latin America in the 1970s and the social history of student movements and armed organizations in provincial Mexico during the Cold War. Among her publications are Restless Memories from Rural Students to Urban Guerrillas. Welcome, Aleida Garcia Aguirre.
Hi, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
And Emily Weintraut is a student researcher and teaching assistant in food science at UC Davis. Hi, Emily.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
That helps our listeners identify your voices, and we'll go back and forth and hear sections of the book. But let's start with Aleda, because this book is such an important manual. It's a documentation. It has so many elements to it. And just because it delights me so much, I want to talk about a couple of the photographs that you included. Full disclosure, I was at that intersection at UC Irvine, which you feature in a photograph in the book, where 1,000 people peacefully took over a suburban intersection in quiet, almost moribund Irvine, peacefully just occupied it. And the excitement and the energy and the solidarity that I felt among those Union comrades was another of many defining moments for me. You must have had quite a thrill and a challenge picking from all of the documents and ephemera objects that you could have included in this volume.
Well, yeah, definitely. There were like thousands of pictures about the strike. I think that every picture was depicting not only what was happening, but also the excitement of the people who were taking the picture. And that's very difficult to select. We also had to navigate which pictures people were okay to share in a book. And that's basically the main reason why we decided to include these pictures in particular. It often comes to a lot of people in a group, you know, in a picture, because you cannot identify necessarily who is in there participating. And we have just a few pictures for their individuals in particular. I love the cover. I love it so much. And we were back and forth about it because it's just the group of workers with their signs up. And I think that having the signs when I was going to some of the picket lines, when I was just looking at how people feel empowered by holding the sign, I think that it says a lot about what is a strike, a collective movement. A sign gives you so much power because it's basically the incarnation of a lot of work in that stick, in that sign. I just love that picture. I loved it.
Well, thanks for that. And also thank you for, again, reiterating the political scholarship and the role of the oral historian, because you said something really important, which is that the photograph not only documents and communicates the perspective of the participants, but very importantly, also of the photographer and how the moment is being documented. So to that end, terrific segue, by the way. Thank you, Aleda. This book is unique in that it has two introductions, because you have, forgive me, I guess a dialectic here. You have two missions. One is, of course, to provide a record, which we call scholarship. But also, let's be clear, you are on the side of the workers, and the way a story is told brings power to their perspective. So one introduction is about the methodology of being an oral historian, and the other, of course, introduces the context of this historic UAW strike. So I thought we'd start with you, Aleda, if you could please read a short section which explains to people who might not be familiar with this sort of tandem perspective that the book embraces, what you're up to with Out of the Lab, Into the Streets, An Oral History of the 2022 UAW Strike at the University of California.
The strike and the union organizing that led to it were documented in real life by a variety of news media and online leftist magazines. This existing documentation is fragmented, overgeneralizing, and primarily focuses on factual descriptions and political analysis of the union strategies to confront the UC in bargaining and the tactics of internal organizing. The experiences of workers during the strike and throughout the history of union organizing at the UC are often restricted to glimpses that, although rich, do not fully capture the knowledge and capabilities that lie in everyday organizing. Our aim in this project is to provide a broad audience with an overarching description of the entire strike, its historical context, the ground-level organizing leading up to it, the everyday experience of the fight, and its implications for organizing among UC academic workers. In addition to building a comprehensive and complex narrative about the strike and the workers who made it possible, we also hope to illuminate the process of the making of the academic working class by listening to the workers themselves as to reflect on their processes. To fulfill these aims, it is essential to meet with the workers using a methodology that would allow both us and the audience to grasp who they are, understand their trajectories in academia, and recognize their path toward seeing themselves as academic workers who could act to defend their interests. This last understanding was crucial, especially in light of their decision to strike. Oral history and memory study methodologies helped us select a handful of workers who could articulate the diversity and challenges of both academia and union organizing as academic workers. We then designed in-depth interviews to capture their experiences.
Thank you, Aleida Garcia Aguirre, for that. And of course, you say it so clearly, elegantly, and pointedly, because you and I and Emily, we all know that in the reporting from, say, the LA Times or the Chronicle or the New York Times, you would never get the line, "the process of the making of the academic working class." I see that both of you are chuckling because it's just so unshy about what it means to dismiss or ignore what passes for some kind of either scholarly or journalistic so-called objectivity, and instead write this book for the people who matter, which is people like me, thank you very much, and for the 40,000 academic workers and their fellow workers at one of the state's largest employers and crucial sites of union organizing. And I also love the phrase, grasp who they are. And now I think we can introduce Emily Weintraut, who is one of those handful, by which I mean nine. What do you call yourself, Emily, now? A case study, an example, a subject, a willing participant, and a really articulate voice among many in this book. So, Emily, it's really helpful, I think, that Aleida and her co-authors, Molly Vine and Patrick Dexter, start by having you introduce yourself. So why don't you read that section from early in the book and we can learn who Emily Weintraut is.
I'm Emily Weintraut. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a proud girl from South Jersey. I'm a student researcher and teaching assistant in the food science department at UC Davis since 2021. I was the first of my family to go to grad school, so this was a very new thing for me. My parents went to college, but they left before finishing. Later, my mom went back to school to finish her teaching degree. My dad is in IT, one of my brothers is a software engineer, and the other is a chemical engineer. All of my life, I wanted to be a gynecologist. Sexuality and sexual health are subjects I'm very interested and passionate about. Up to this day, in undergrad, I was pre-med and I shadowed a gynecologist who provided medical consultations that went for over an hour, which is super rare. But he didn't make much money and had to have a separate job. I thought that was the kind of doctor I like to be, but I also realized that path was not feasible for me. And then I panicked because I had made decisions around med school. But one day, I watched a video about the founder of one of the first kombucha drink companies in the US, GT's Kombucha, and that piqued my interest. And I thought that there was a lot of research to be done in the field of food science and health. So I decided to go to grad school instead of med school, and I'm happy with where I am. Never would I have expected to be here. I know tons about my research field, but I feel like I'm out of my depth on everything else. But funnily enough, I don't study kombucha. I study beer because my boss has funding there.
That's Emily Weintraut, scholar, activist, member of the UAW. Emily, do you recognize your voice there? I'm just curious, were these oral histories done with audio recording or were they done via email? By the way, you're a very good storyteller, and that's a funny story.
Thank you for the compliment. It was in person with Aleda, and honestly, a lot of it goes to the questions that they asked that Molly, Aleda, and Patrick all worked on. They really just asked really great questions. But yeah, that's how I sound. It's very interesting to see how my life has changed in the years since this book was originally written, because now I do study kombucha, for example. So, yeah.
That's terrific. And it must be gratifying or helpful to hear and read your political voice, because you and I are probably used to speaking in our scholarly voices or our teacherly voices or our research type voices. But this is a very helpful insight into how people make life and career decisions. So that autobiographical element really personalizes and makes very vivid the story of what kind of work people do and why and how they do it. And sometime I'd like to learn about kombucha science and beer science. So the project here, again, to remind listeners, is that probably Aleda and her co-editors had to collect, curate, and edit, I don't know, Aleda, hundreds of hours and synthesize and condense. And then here's the remarkable thing, Aleda, and I say this as an editor myself, organizing this thematically to tell a story that's both chronological and that presents an analysis. Can you talk a little bit about interviewing people like Emily, how you constructed the questions, and then, holy cow, putting this together so it reads, I don't know, like a movie or something?
Thank you. I take it as a compliment. I am a very proud historian, although I'm not doing history right now, but I'm interviewing people. That's my work. And I think doing this kind of project, beautiful in the sense that since the first moment when you are designing the interviews, you need to reflect collectively on what it makes sense to ask and the order of the questions, because it brings you to what is memory. And the way that you present the questions is very important to the way that people are going to remember and put together a story, the story of their lives. So since the very beginning, we as historians, or I as a historian who does oral history, I give up on trying to be objective, because I know that the way that I'm asking questions is going to influence the way that people are going to narrate their own lives. So it's like a dialogue between my interest as a scholar or as a historian and people's lives. And so the very beginning, putting together the questions was just beautiful, because we, meaning Molly, Patrick, and I, we were meeting every week for at least 3 hours just to think about the questions and the order of the question. And I'm very obsessive because I do oral history, but what I'm very proud of doing is memory studies and the formation of subjectivity. How do people become to be who they are, and how do people form their own identity? And so I know that every single repetition in a narrative is telling you something also. It's not just the narrative, but how do you tell it? And I'm that obsessive. And Patrick and Molly had to kind of calm me down and say, like, hey, this is a very important project. This is not a scholar project. You need to focus on the big goal, which is tell this story about the workers. And I thank them for that because I am very obsessive. And then we put together the interviews, and I want to acknowledge one person, Aide Mariscal, who also participated in the strike and who was also hired to do interviews with us. She did 3 interviews, and Patrick, Molly, and I did the rest of them. And with some people, we did 2 or 3 rounds of interviews. Like, for example, with Maddie, we did 2 interviews because the first one was great, but I knew when I read it that there was much more that needed to be explored. And we went for another one. With Artie, with Emily, we did 2 rounds. With Kenzo, for example, we did 3. Desmond, oh my God, Desmond, Desmanuel, he's awesome. We did 1, but the one that we have is 6 hours. So just imagine editing, well, transcribing, then editing the transcription to be understandable, and then editing these 6 hours. It was just crazy. And the same goes with Joyce, for example. It was a very short interview. It was a little bit less than 2 hours, but it was so dense. It had a lot of information. How do you break that interview into different teams? Because it's all intertwined. And that is very difficult to do. And so again, Patrick and Molly were pushing me to realize that this was not a book about how their subjectivities were formed, but a book about the workers and how they were doing the strike. And that's where I had to lean into my social history background and say, so we're doing basically what E.P. Thompson did for the historical formation of the working class in England. I was like, okay, so I need to change my cassette and we're doing something different. It took a while. So, and as you can notice in my voice, I am very excited to talk about how you build this kind of a book. Yeah.
It's so elegantly assembled. And indeed, what it makes sense to ask must indeed be the mantra for someone in your line of work. It doesn't hurt that you have some really eloquent subjects. And I think we have time to hear one more short section from one of them. That's Emily Weintraut. You'll read a little bit, Emily, from what it's like to actually confront the incredibly difficult and busy work of figuring out how to stage a strike.
Around October, we rented a union office in Davis, and a lot of organizing happened from there. Phone banking, texting people, making sure people were signing up for picket shifts, which was a pain because people were not signing up. To be honest, if I was not as involved with our union, I would not have signed up for a picket shift. I would have just showed up and gone off the vibe of where I wanted to be. Getting enough picket shift leaders was a stressful thing, but the picket line, day one, tons of people showed up to do the work. I start remembering and I get dizzy by how much we did in those weeks. I was helping sign people up for strike pay. That was a horror. It was so much work. You have to give everyone a 15-minute spiel, but people came in at different times. So you'd end up with 10 people having different conversations at once. And there were all these things you needed to hit because you don't want to have it just in a pamphlet. You want people to be aware. These are your legal rights. This is the procedure for X or Z. A strike is very serious, and the idea of getting your pay docked is very serious. And I say it was a mess just because it was so much simultaneous work, not because we weren't organized. I was helping with remote strike pay sign up too, and that was a mess because it was so much simultaneous work we had to do because we had limited time to do it. And the reason we didn't do it in advance was because we didn't want to make people anxious. Just dealing with that and sending the forms to UAW International every night, it was a lot. We have so many people in our union, which is great, but getting all those people signed up within a short amount of time was difficult and stressful. I don't think all of our union members knew all the work we were doing in preparation for the strike. There's this idea, and I was of that mind, that there's people who do union stuff. But that's not true, and that's why in orientations we push the message that our union is of, by, and for our members. It's by our members, which means the people doing strike pay signups are your coworkers. A lot of people seem to think there's more structure in place and don't realize that it's not true until they get more involved. Our union is member-run, even though they're staff, and it relies on members getting involved. That's why whenever we reach out to people, we ask if they're willing to get more involved or take some concrete next steps. We try to make people make it their union and our union rather than the union, because it's not an effective union. It's not an effective representation if it's just some third party somewhere. And because our union is member-led, we got such an amazing strike authorization vote turnout. That's why we got a great strike turnout at first. That's why we have people so passionate, because it is by us and because it represents us.
That's Emily Weintraut, one of the 9 activist worker organizers from the UAW, academic workers, researchers, a huge cohort which won a very successful contract, as documented in the book Out of the Lab, Into the Streets. The blurb, of course, is from Sean Fain, president of the UAW. Anybody interested in joining with their coworkers to take collective action and win big should read this book. It's such a valuable, inspiring account, but it's also a terrific how-to. It's been my pleasure to hear from one of the editors and to hear in her own voice from one of the participants in this oral history collection. Thank you so much to Emily Weintraut and to Aleida Garcia Aguirre for being my guest this week on Bibliocracy. Thanks for listening, and thanks always to KPFK board op Osman Flamenco and the best engineer ever, Mark Maxwell. Please do check out the Bibliocracy Radio website to learn more about this show and hear past episodes, and find writing from and about Orange County at the Citric Acid site, citricacid.ink. You'll see terrific writing there, including by some authors who've appeared on this show. Thanks again to the community of writers for producing Bibliocracy Radio as a podcast. Finally, you can find me at the Santa Monica Review booth at this weekend's Festival of Books on the campus of USC, where we can talk about books and, of course, KPFK. Meanwhile, join me, Andrew Tonkovich, next Thursday at 2:30 for another show dedicated to celebration of the literary arts and solidarity, too, on Bibliocracy.
Oh, the ink is black, the page is white. Together we learn to read and write, to read and write. And now a child can understand, this is the law of all the land, all the land. Oh, the ink is black, the page is white. Together we learn to read and write, to read and write. Their robes were black, their heads were white. The schoolroom doors were closed so tight, were closed up tight.
Support for KPFK comes from a screening of the documentary Steal This Story on Friday, April 17th, 2026, as a fundraiser for KPFK. The event takes place at the Lemley Royal in West Los Angeles, with a screening at 1:10 p.m. and 7:10 p.m. Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman will be in attendance for a Q&A session alongside filmmakers Carl Diehl and Tia Lesson. Information and full event details are available at kpfk.org.
Hey, this is Brad Friedman of the Bradcast, heard right here on KPFK Mondays at 3 p.m. As you know, KPFK is corporate-free, listener-supported radio. But that means we need you to support our work and help drastically shorten our fund drives by joining the KPFK Sustainers Circle today. You can pledge $5, $10, $20, or any amount you like, automatically collected each month to help keep the Bradcast and all of the other KPFK shows on the air. please go to kpfk.org and click Make a Pledge to join the Sustainers Circle and help keep KPFK's important, independent voices on your public airwaves. That's kpfk.org. Please sign up now. And thanks.
You're tuned into Pacifica Radio, KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.5 in San Diego, 99.